CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. You've made it Tuesday morning. How are you, Levan? You good?
I am well. How are you?
I must tell you, I'm feeling fucking horrible, actually, now that I think about it. I woke up... I had the most weird sleep last night. I was just the whole night, like, tossing and turning. I don't know what it was. I felt really shitty. I felt like, you know how when you've got, like, a tickle in your back and you think you're going to get a cold, that kind of feeling? And then, I don't know, it's like this this kind of heaviness. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. It's probably nothing, but I don't feel as good as I should. And I hate that because I started this week with lots of optimism and enthusiasm. So we'll just have to see. I mean, it happens to everybody, right? You have off days and on days.
Yeah. No, like, the wheel turns, the days aren't always the same. But also, most time, if you can feel something's coming, it's most likely coming. Like, you know yourself best. You know your body best. So I don't think your night could have been as worse as mine, though.
Tell me.
I doubt it.
Tell me.
Yeah, my two-year-old is extremely sick, so she refuses to sleep in her room. So obviously she hops in with us, which is fine. We don't mind. Mm. And then obviously there's a newborn. Well, she's like 2 months now, so not really newborn, but, you know, still fresh out the oven. And the two-year-old's just causing chaos in the bed, tossing, turning, waking up every hour, sulking. When you ask her what's wrong, she doesn't want to tell you. She just goes, like, that's her language.
Boy.
So we're just, like, trying to figure everything out. I know I have to be up early because I've got a long day ahead of me. I'm just like, Lord, take the wheel.
Yeah.
So I think you did okay, Gareth. You did all right.
Well, then I'm not going to complain. Your night's worse. I think it's way worse.
There you go.
I have a busy day at the office today with a bunch of meetings. And then it's my mom's birthday today, but we're doing a party for her. She's organized this big party on Saturday. Ooh. Yeah.
Nice.
So she's having... I think it's about 50 or 60 friends to this party of hers, and she's been planning it for weeks and months, and it sounds like it's going to be really good. So I've just got to make sure I'm better for that. I don't want to be, like, useless, you know?
Yeah, I think just, like, pop some vitamins, just, you know, stay on top of your game. You'll be fine.
No, I hope so.
You'll be fine.
Anyway.
And obviously you need to smile and wave at this party.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No. Oh, there's work to be done. So... There's a lot that's happened since I last spoke to you, but we've also got a pretty busy show today. So there's obviously African Analysis with JJ Cornish, which everybody loves. I'm going to talk a little bit about something that, you know, I know it's not everybody's favorite topic, but it's something we really need to address, and it's something that we can't talk enough about, and that is the cost of gender-based violence in this country. And I don't know about you, but I'm kind of sick of the lip service that politicians pay to this. And I'm sick of hearing people who say it as, like, part of their corporate social responsibility, but they don't actually give a damn. Because we know what's happening. We know where it's happening. And I think it's probably about time that we had a serious conversation about this. We're going to talk to two people who really do know what they're talking about. Cornet Davis, who's a prof at the University of Johannesburg. And we'll be speaking to somebody else who's really, really smart when it comes to these things. Shared Value Africa is a research group that have decided to do a little bit more poking and prodding in the world of like what's actually going down when it comes to this stuff. And we're going to speak to somebody from Shared Value Africa as well. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on in the research, what we know, what we don't know, what kind of things we can do something about, what kind of stuff is just going to be talked about forever. So we'll hopefully get some really interesting things going. I think it'll be fun. Very interesting conversation.
You speak the facts where you say it's an uncomfortable situation. I mean, people don't really like to talk about it, but I don't think our job here is to avoid these conversations that people don't like to talk about. We have to address them. We have to bring them to the table and really, like, unpack them for what they truly are. So I think that's going to be an interesting conversation for sure.
But how are you? I mean, like, besides the disturbed night of hardly any sleep, are you good? What's been going on in your life? Because you haven't really stopped working, and you've got all of these children who are, like, more and more demanding of your time. I'm just curious,
For sure.
How do you manage this situation? How are you How are you dealing with it? Do you have a diary?
So I don't. So like, I'm crumbling as we speak. No, I'm kidding. It's a lot, man. It's really a lot. But like balance, I'm just trying to find like this nice balance between like mom mode and like career mode, work mode, and like daughter mode. Because my mom also needs me as well. And so I'm just putting on all these hats at different times of the day. And having like that support structure is probably the nicest thing. And it's like the best thing, honestly. Like, I went through a phase of like having a great nanny to having a very shitty nanny to having no nanny. And now I've got two really, really cool nannies.
Two? And then, that's fantastic. You need two.
I had to because like it was just getting so hectic. But over the weekend, like we had a little bit of like a somber moment. So remember I told you that when I moved in here, I inherited these amazing koi fish and I was so excited.
Oh, yes.
But I was also like, oh, we'll see how it goes. Dude. Oh.
Didn't go well.
Oh, God. It didn't go well, guys. It didn't go well.
How many are dead?
All of them, dude. All of them.
Shit. Oh, Gareth. You killed them all?
Dude, I didn't kill. Look, nobody did any killing, right? But let's just say we woke up on Sunday morning and these fish were like upside down. Oh, it was so sad. But what happened was the pool guy who comes to like do our pool on Saturdays, he came through and obviously he's filling up the pool. So we're like, oh, you know what? Let's quickly fill up the pond because there's a little bit of water that we can add. Oh my God. Did we not forget to switch off the water? So now, unfortunately, we've lost all of our, oh, dude. I'm so embarrassed. Like we lost all of our koi fish to fresh water. We were trying to help them.
Jesus.
We thought, let's give them fresh water.
Oh my God.
We didn't realize that they don't actually like fresh water. They like dirty water. They like bacteria and stuff like that. It was so bad. So Sunday morning was just chaos, having to get rid of the fish before the kids wake up. Because if they wake up and they see these upside down fish, they'll be like hurt or whatever and traumatized. So when my 8-year-old gets up, the first thing he does is he goes outside.
Yeah.
Dude, he's like, Mom. I'm like, hey, how's it? How'd you sleep? He's like, Mom. I'm like, what's up? He's like, what's wrong with the fish? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, they're gone. I'm like, really? What do you mean? So now I'm struggling between, let me just tell this kid the truth and like, should I not crush his dream? So I just told him, I'm like, you know what? Mommy and Daddy made a bit of a mess. You know, we forgot to switch off the water. Your fish are dead, my boy. Your fish are gone.
Oh, shame.
And he's like, giving them names. He's like, Jeffrey and little Alfred.
Oh, my God.
Named all these fish. I'm sitting there. I'm like, oh my gosh. But I think he handled it okay, as well as he could. You know, he kept going back to check. But it was, it was tough, dude. It was a somber morning.
So there was a massacre at your house. That's what happened.
There was a massacre on Sunday morning, and the murderer was fresh water. A tap that was like just left on.
You know, I've got to admit to you, I really don't like fish. I don't like big koi fish. I find them all a bit freaky. Whenever I see them, I think, wow, that's really beautiful. I would never have fish. I don't like them. Find them a little bit, bizarre.
Yo.
They're not my favorite things.
What a lesson.
Yeah.
What a freaking lesson, dude. Yo, I was like, okay, cool. No more giving you guys fresh water.
Yeah.
But I have vowed to buy new koi fish.
Oh, no, please don't.
Which now, No.
No, just don't.
At least I learned my lesson. Now it'll never happen again.
No, it's...
You know? I mean, I've just got an empty pond, Gareth.
Don't go back down that road. No, it's better to have an empty pond. It's less for you to worry about. Listen, they're not like... I know there are people who say, oh, no, when they feed their koi fish, they come to them and that kind of thing. They're like real pets, but I don't believe it. I mean, fish, they don't have brains.
Yeah.
They don't remember what the hell's going on. Those, especially these pond-dwelling fish, I mean, these are not smart things. Sorry.
Look, on one end, you're right. I did think about you. And in speaking to my son, I said, look, I've got a colleague who lost a very dear, dear dog to him. Hmm. And at least with a dog, that's your friend. You sleep with it, you touch it. It's completely different. With these fish, you kind of just walk to the pond, throw food in there, talk to them a bit, and then you fuck off. So I think I feel a bit better because there was no real personal connection. But I do want to try again. Not for me, for the kids. I want to try again. I'm not going to give up.
All right, well, go ahead. But I'm so not on your page on this one. Sorry. All right. I always get a little bit nervous when I see anyone trending. I see Trevor Noah's trending. I wonder if that's a good kind of trending or a bad one.
Mm.
Oh, it's his foundation. It's his foundation.
Oh, it's his foundation. Oh, yeah. That's lovely.
Yeah.
All these like big guys have foundations now. That's good.
Yeah. It's how you give back. Anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also it's a good way of kind of, you know, sending money in the right directions. I don't want to be too cynical sure. about it because when you're making sort of serious money, you have to create these vehicles to put the money in because otherwise the tax authorities just get hold of them. So that's also part of why everybody has a foundation these days. Got a couple of voice notes here I want you to hear. So take a listen to these. Let's start with this one. Which I love. In fact, no, I'll start. Let me start with this one over here. This is good.
Sorry, I'm listening late to Friday show and the conversation of deleting Twitter. I woke up one morning, I think it was my first year, 2015, and I opened Twitter, and myself and my friends enjoyed Twitter throughout our youth. But that one morning I woke up and I opened Twitter, and it was just literally the whole thing they were talking about the whole morning was just dicks and vaginas the whole morning. And before I'd gotten out of bed, all I saw was dicks and vaginas and a conversation about dicks and vaginas. And I deleted the app. And I've never looked back. Peace.
Just dicks and vaginas all over Twitter.
All over Twitter. Yeah, if you're following the wrong people, that's most likely what's going to happen. You will see those kinds of things for sure.
You know, I sometimes wonder, like, how come Twitter gets away with like just being basically like a springboard for porn? But all the others, if you put up, because I remember I put up like this joke picture once of these two guys dressed up as girls in a swimming costume or whatever, and they looked like ridiculous. It was clear it was a joke, right? And then I got banned from Facebook. I actually lost my first account because they said, oh no, you can't post that. It's indecent material. And then I thought about like Twitter, where you basically got serious porn, like real hardcore stuff happening. And nobody on Twitter seems to give a damn. Like on Facebook, they're really sensitive. On Instagram, if you put in, like if there's some girl with a bikini on and she like forgets to edit out a little bit of nipple or whatever, it's shut down, right? She's completely banned. But Twitter, they don't give a damn. So I think Twitter is probably the worst of them all.
I think, and I could be wrong, but because like the likes of Instagram and Facebook are very visual heavy, and I mean, Twitter is like text first, they probably have better structures for these kinds of like visual dilemmas where people are putting these kinds of things. Whereas Twitter probably isn't that strong. I mean, it's there. It's definitely in place. I've reported a couple of images, like some really inappropriate shit just pops up on my timeline. I don't want to see that. And also, I'm not following you.
Yeah.
So it's somebody who I'm following that retweeted your mess. That's right. How it landed in my space. That's when it's annoying. But you can definitely report like some stuff if you don't like it. But
I think some of the really weird and creepy shit is actually just retweeted with you like mentioned by people who really don't like you. You know, so like they copy you in this stuff so that it can look like you're involved in it. And then there's like some disgusting, like really ugly, nasty, like really gross porn, and they're like, oh, let me copy at Lebang Hosana or at Gareth Cliff. You know, it's just gross. So I don't know why people would do that, but there we go. Don't you only see the tweets from people who you follow? No, you see, this is the point. It's like if someone retweets you and puts a mention in it, it arrives on your timeline. Sanela says, I've been in the UAE for a little over a week now. Got to check out the beach, Marina Beach in Dubai. Everything looks gorgeous except the sea. It has no waves. That seemed crazy to me. Well, you're in the Persian Gulf, so there's not really a lot of wave action. Twitter is more than 60% bots, and bots do not give a damn. That's exactly right.
That's the facts. Those are the facts. I've never heard anybody complain about being in Dubai. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I'm the AE, but it's so well. There's no this, there's no that. What?
Right.
Enjoy yourself.
Gavin says, oh, just arrived here and can't believe we're talking about these fish again. Well, Gavin, you have we're going to give you 5 minutes to find something else to listen to this morning, if that's how you feel.
The world is your oyster, Gavin. Go on. You can literally find whatever Gavin, the fuck you want. Gavin, it doesn't have to be us.
I think it's quite it's a really interesting update that all the fish are dead, Gavin. But if you find that uninteresting, I mean, I don't know what you do find interesting. So there we go. Here's another voice note for you. I love these. I'm really getting into these.
This is cool.
Hey, Gareth. You're one of the most articulate people I know. And there's this word I think you might quite enjoy it called ultra-crepidarian. Mm. It means someone who talks very knowledgeably about something he or she has no clue about. And I think that's very relevant about some of the people you talk about in your show. So the word is ultra-crepidarian, someone who talks very knowledgeably about something he or she has no clue about. I figured you might enjoy that word. Incidentally, you use some big words during your show. Maybe you have something like Gareth's Big Word of the Week or Gareth's Articulation of the Week. Thanks very much for the show.
All right. Well, we used to have Word of the Day when I was doing the radio show, and we would find like the most ridiculous words we could, and it was fun. In fact, I even have a book here with like words that have gone out of fashion that they used to use like 100 years ago, which are amazing. There's some really great words to describe stuff that you're always looking for a word for those things, but they've come up with words. They've made words for them. We just don't know them. So I'm not going to go back to doing that. And when words come up, let me know if there's a word that you think is interesting, like ultra crepidarianism.
That's cool.
It's a cool word. I mean, there are a lot of people who use this word, or should have this word used against them because they don't know. Ultra crepidarian. It basically means, it's like if I, for example, start waxing lyrical about, I don't know, cubist art. Okay. So I'm in an art gallery with a bunch of people and they're all super pretentious, but they know what they're talking about. So they're like, well, you know, there was that Piet Mondrian, which has got just the primary colors and the black and white in it. That is, like, to me, that is the ultimate distillation of what cubism really is all about.
Distillation?
Now, I don't know if that's true. I made it up right now on the spot. I grabbed the name of an artist who may or may not even be cubist, and I threw it in. It sounds very convincing, right? But it's absolutely it's nonsense. So it's like someone who gives advice on stuff and they actually don't know a goddamn thing. Or they talk about something like they know it, but they actually don't know anything. You meet those people. There was a family member we used to have. She's not around anymore. She did. But she used to say, you know, let me tell you about this. And the thing is this, and I know this. And I mean, she would she'd never had kids, but she was going to tell my mom about like being a parent. I was like, hello. Hello.
I refer to those people as hype men, like men. Like you're just a hype man. You're just filling in the blanks, and there's no way that you know everything about everything. It's okay to know a little bit about everything, but I doubt you know that much about every single topic.
Oh.
Yeah, well, those are hype men for sure, for sure.
Well, don't be an ultra crepidarian. Only talk about stuff that you really know, or ask questions, and then people won't think that you're a pretentious pain in the backside, right? So
asking questions is completely allowed. Mm. You're allowed to not know things.
Right.
I think there's this pressure that we're experiencing lately of like having to comment on every single topic. And if people are talking about eggs, I need to get my 2 cents in on eggs. Whereas back at the ranch, you don't care about eggs. Mm-mm. And if you'd like to know about eggs, just ask. But if you don't care, it's okay to sit it out. Don't feel, you know, like you have to comment on every single thing. Don't be a hype man. It's okay. Let the experts do their thing. There's egg spurts out there. Let them do their thing.
I also think that there's probably there's this pressure, as you put it, by everybody in society. You've got to have an opinion on everything, right? So you either have thought about it, which is the minority of people, because most people don't think about these things. Most people, if you ask them, like, what do you really think of what's going on in Russia and the Ukraine, which is a big news story, right? Everybody knows that's happening, or most people will know it's happening. But there are plenty of people who haven't actually thought it through. They haven't got that much information. They don't really have an opinion. But
Yeah.
I guarantee if you ask any of those people who don't know a damn thing about it, what do you think of what's going on in Russia and Ukraine? Like, they'll immediately launch into an opinion. And then...
Yeah.
And then they have to stick to that opinion. They have to defend that opinion. It's like a sunken cost thing. Now, that opinion is important because, you know, we live in a time where social media is almost more valuable and important than our real lives. And that's how we define ourselves. I put up an Instagram thing yesterday because there was this person sitting in a car and they have tattoos all over their body. They've got like 10 things hanging from each earlobe. The whole face is tattooed, bald. Mm-hmm. And this person says, I just find it because I actually don't want to screw this up. It's just too bizarre to, like, if you, I've got to get this right. Let me just see here. Okay, I'm a trans queer revolutionary anarchist. So this person, I mean, if I show you the picture of them, it's just unreal. So this is what they look like. Yeah. So I just put up there. I just put up there, like, yeah, sure, you know, identity politics. The point is that someone like that, they need to be a queer trans revolutionary anarchist because they don't have any personality. You know, sit with them for 15 minutes and you're going to be bored to death because they're going to just bamboozle you and bash you with all of their identity stuff because they think they're fascinating, right? And this is the part of the problem too. Like, people think they're amazing and they're so interesting and, oh, people just can't wait to meet me because they got a couple of likes on Instagram. You know? They're like, oh, everybody's just queuing up to meet me, which is not true. So someone like that goes, if I take on these labels, not only does it make me sound really interesting, like I've thought about who I am, I've done a whole lot of self-analysis, but it also gives me immunity from criticism. Because if I tell someone I'm a queer trans revolutionary anarchist, the queer and trans parts of that, you can't criticize. Because even though you know that that's mostly bullshit, I mean, the word queer has become everything and nothing. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean a damn thing. It used to be a slur. It used to be the kind of thing, like, if you wanted to be insulting to someone who was gay or lesbian, you'd call them queer. You know, oh, look at that queer. Kind of like calling someone a fag or whatever. But then it was taken, like, you know, the N-word has been taken by black people. And what's happened is that now if someone uses that word, they've got a whole different definition in their head to what everyone else has. So they just take that word because it's like a multi-plug. You can just plug anything. You can plug in a two-pin. You can put a three-pin. You can put one of those chargers, USB. It's a multi-plug. So someone says, I'm queer. And you're like, what does that mean? But if you ask that, then you're obviously a terrible person. So to go back to my point, because this is what makes people stick out on social media, there's enormous pressure for people to have opinions about shit they don't know.
100%.
So now you've got to be ready. You've got to be like, if someone says, what do you think of Russia and Ukraine? Or if that's what's trending on social media today, you have to jump in and give your opinion, like you said, Levan. And people are like, actually, I don't know anything. But I'll say this is my opinion. And then that will be the hill I die on, even though it was only my opinion 2 minutes ago. And before that, I didn't think about it at all.
The sadder thing is that we're not even creating our own opinions or thinking for ourselves, right? We hear a story or we see something and we literally go to like the first or second comments, or we just scroll through the first comments to see what the popular thinking is on that matter. So that if ever we're asked about this, we can just say what everybody else is thinking, so that we kind of, like, you know, we're on the fence, we're not too left or too right. And that's the real sad part, is that nobody's being backed into a corner to actually just do some research if you're interested in and really just create your own opinion. No time for that at all. If the headline is so-and-so did such and such a thing, then that is the fact. And if you scroll through the last and you believe it, then that's your opinion on it. You actually don't have an original idea on this matter.
Look at stuff that doesn't require a whole lot of research, because it's in the news every day, but people are still stupid. Oscar Pistorius murdering Reva, or Senzo Miyua, right? Everyone's got an opinion. You ask people, oh, no, I think Kelly Kumalo did it. Or you say to someone, Oscar Pistorius, they're like, oh, no, he's definitely a murderer or whatever. And you hear from people, I think that, you know, the thing about that Senza Miyua story is that the police, I think they're in on it. Like, you think, who are you people? You don't know anything. Anyway, that's ultra crepidarianism, and I love it. Great word, and thanks for the voice notes. Here's another one. This is good.
Hey, Gareth, you should have a section on your show where...
Oh, shit, sorry. I've lost that one. I'll just have to start her again. Irritating. Here we go.
Hey, Gareth, you should have a section on your show where you let people call in and wish their significant other happy birthday so you can tell them all to fuck off and find them themselves. Good show, man. Cheers.
Yeah, I love that. I always did you also, when you were in radio, did you also get those calls from people? I just want to wish my husband a happy birthday. And you go,
of course.
You go, well, why
of
don't,
course.
Why don't you phone him? Why? That's how we knew social media was going to be a disaster, right? Because here you have people, two people who none of us know. They like listening to the show or whatever. Tracy calls in. She goes, hi, I just want to say hi to my boyfriend, Ben, and I want to wish him a happy birthday. And you're like, but the rest of us don't know you or Ben. Why are you dragging us into your happy birthday message? And that's what social media is. It's like, we need, because we want attention from strangers. We want you to pay attention to us.
Yeah.
I need you. All Steady. Of you must participate in my happy birthday to my boyfriend. I'm like, nah.
Yeah.
Nah, nah.
You don't know me to a bar of soap. Yeah. You don't know anything about me. You don't know where I live.
That's
but
okay.
You're going to know that today it's my man's birthday, right. And that's that.
Yeah.
We're basically just being forced into your life. And isn't that social media?
Correct.
It's exactly that. It's too much information about other people's lives. Information that I don't want to know.
Right.
I don't want to be privy to the fact that you ran out of toilet paper and you took a shit this morning. Don't tweet that. Leave that in the drafts. You don't always have to press send.
Well, you see, again, this is like going back to our previous discussion just 2 minutes ago. This is what it's all come down to, because people don't have anything interesting to say. So they just imagine that we're all going to find them interesting. That's what I love about our audience here, because I used to cut people off on radio all the time when they used to call in with that kind of nonsense. Or someone would call in and go, won't you help me to find my lost dog? I'm like, listen. We've got
SPCA, dog.
Yeah,
SPCA. We are not the SPCA.
Literally, dog. But we've got, let's say we have 2 million people listening to a radio show. Now you're going to tell everybody to be on the lookout for this dog when maybe 20 of the people who are listening even live in the area where the dog went missing. So what you're saying to the other, I don't know, 2.99999 million people is like, stop whatever you're doing. We're going to involve you in something that you can't do anything about, that you aren't involved in, that has got nothing to do with you, because this person thinks they're important enough to interrupt proceedings. That's what it is. And
exactly.
it's like this weird,
exactly.
It's this bizarre like need to be heard, to be taken seriously, for people to make you and your life and your identity front and center. This is what's wrong with the world today. And people don't even see it, hey? You sit with some of these people, and they're on their phone the whole time. I was talking the other day about that party I went to, and there were these two girls who were sitting there, and like, they're just doing selfies the whole time. The whole time, just doing selfies.
Oh, man.
And I thought, wow, it's just incredible to me that we've got to a point in human evolution where we have the ability to connect to people we've never met before, to people who may be fascinating. They may know things that we don't know that we want to learn. I went for coffee yesterday morning with a guy he's so fascinating. He knows all about ballistics. He's interested in like ancient history. He's survived. He's had a near-death experience. He's like a really interesting dude. I don't think I picked up my phone once while we were sitting there. Now, obviously, in order to arrange the coffee, I needed my phone. But that's what the phone should be for. You should be looking at this thing going, wow, what a tool. What an amazing tool to connect to anyone and everyone that I want to learn things, to do things, to improve myself, to laugh, you know. But instead, no, people are like, love me, love me, love me, love me. I'm going to do selfies all day until everyone on the internet has seen me selfie.
Sure.
Like, wow.
To what end,
well,
guys? To what end?
Well,
If you're worried now, Gareth, I worry about 20 years from now, when we've got a generation of kids who have grown up and this is their daily bread. This is their lives. They right. can't breathe without at least posting on Instagram once a day. They can't breathe without, you know, doing another TikTok. That's my worry. I wonder what the effect of this is all going to have. I think we're lucky. We're on the better side of this. We came before all of this noise and this mess, so we can assess it for what it is and actually feel sorry for them, because truly the fact that you cannot sit and have a conversation with someone and really take out every part of that conversation because your phone notifications, ding, 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 right. and you're like, oh, sorry, oh, emails, oh, I need my WhatsApp. Oh, dude, it's so sad because now your attention is so fleeting, and if it's this bad now, oh, boy. I really wonder, like, what kind of adults these kids are going to be.
Well,
literally, that's my big worry.
Like, I'm so on your page on this thing, but you're a parent. I'm not. You're going to have to deal with this stuff, and I don't know what's going to happen.
Dude.
Like, I wonder how these kids are going to find balance, because it's not getting better. And even though there are some people who are very good at kind of, they manage their social media, they manage their online time, they manage their real world versus virtual world. I think you're absolutely right. It's going to get worse. And wait till people have virtual reality in their houses. Wait till you put on goggles. And instead of actually going to Paris, you could just walk through a virtual Paris. And you don't have to interact with any human beings. You can do this all on your own. You never need to leave the basement. You know, it's going to be a very weird world. It's going to be like the Matrix, where all those bodies are like hooked up to these, you know, these massive machines. Yeah. It's just, I don't like the sound and the possibility of that. And everybody says, oh, but it's going to be amazing because most people can't afford to go to Paris. Well, you know what? I used to not be able to afford to go anywhere, and I would look at pictures. I'd read books. I would look at maps. I would try to find out
and
stuff.
And you're dreaming.
Right. I mean, that's one of the reasons.
You still want to go.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I love having all these people that we have on the show. I mean, we've got JJ Cornish coming on just now. You can live vicariously through him. He's been to, you know, Somalia and the Congo and Libya and all of these amazing places. So when he comes on in the morning, even though none of us have been, or some of us have maybe been, this guy comes on and he tells us a story and you go, wow, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
You don't have to actually be there.
Yeah.
Yourself.
And also it's the people, right? I feel like in the little traveling that I've done, it's always the people of that place that make the actual experience, because it's how they live and their cultures, et cetera, et cetera. So when you remove the people from the place, it's almost like, okay, cool, sure, you put on this VR goggle and you've walked through Paris, but you haven't sat down and parlé le français with anyone. You haven't reread and ha-ha'd with anyone. You're just kind of, you know, not, there's just that thing that's missing. So it's sad, but I mean, I'm hoping to not be around for when all of that starts to happen.
Bad news for you. You are going to be around, and your kids are going to be like, Mom, what do we do? And you're going to have to come up with some idea.
I'm going to just have to figure it out. I'll figure it out. Well, you'll be immortal, so you're going to be around for everything. Like,
I don't feel like
you're worse off than we are.
I'm just telling you, I need to take a break from this show. I'm feeling burnt out here. I'm burnt out. Like, I woke up last week, and I suddenly thought, I need to take a few days off this show. I've had enough. I love doing it, but I need to now. I need to take a break. And I haven't been, apart from when I went to Mexico in March, we haven't missed one show this year. We didn't miss any during lockdown. And I need to get away. I've had enough. I'm like, I just can't do this waking up thing for another 5 days in a row without a break. I'm seriously feeling it. So thank you for the immortality, but that's not true. Here's one more of these before we get to JJ, and then we'll look at some headlines as well. So take
that. All right, we're doing a little better with the voice notes this morning. Suppose my scolding worked. Ha, ha, ha. Look, I know it's no politics Friday, but I just want to touch on something quickly.
Oh, no, that's from Friday. We can't use that.
With regards to the iOS and always entering your apps, so one solution, very easy. Face ID. Go on every one of your apps that requests it, enable Face ID. It's a game changer. Tim Apple, as Donald Trump called him, has thought of everything for us.
Yeah, but dude, I'm not talking about apps. I'm talking about when your Apple ID keeps coming up and asking you to enter, you know, your details again. And it does that, I promise you, every single day. It says to me, please reissue or retype your Apple ID every day. And I can't get it to stop.
That's so annoying. Yeah. That is so annoying. So who just knows their Apple ID password? I always forget mine, please. Number one. Exactly. Also, why do you need it so much? It just sounds like your phone is broken, dude. It's sounding like a phone thing.
Mm. Right. Okay, so that's all we've got in the way of the voice notes for this morning, but keep them coming. And that number is 071-783-6214. You can send us a voice note anytime, and we will get to them either during the show today or tomorrow. So 071-783-6214. As I said, busy show this morning. We've got a lot of people on. We've got JJ Cornish coming up just now with African Analysis. We've also got a very, very heavy but necessary discussion a little bit later on, which I think you'll find interesting. And there will be room for huge disagreement, I think, because that's a big part of what we do here.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's take a look at some of the news. Where do we begin? Okay, so Cape Town has suspended the transport services there after buses and cars were stoned after a protest in Hout Bay. So if you live in Cape Town, you're probably well aware of this already. But then, you know, people who live on this side of the mountain don't always know what's going on that side of the mountain. So people are a bit disjointed there. And just for your general information, My City Bus and Dialer Ride services in Hout Bay have been suspended amid protest action in the area. According to Ward Councillor Rob Quintus, violence flared up on Monday morning, when private vehicles and My City buses were stoned. Police spokesperson Sergeant Wesley Twigg said that the protest action started on Monday at around 7 o'clock. He added the protest appeared to be transport-related. He said approximately 50 protesters took to the street and a bus was damaged. A public violence case was issued at Hout Bay SAPS for investigation. Law enforcement agencies will remain in the area to monitor the situation. So, sounds like, you know, people get cross, they destroy infrastructure. That's what happens because they're frustrated.
Yep, rinse and repeat. Rinse and repeat.
Correct. Also, Duduzile Zuma, that is Jacob Zuma's daughter, she has had some things to say about Fikile Mbalula and his endorsement of Cyril Ramaphosa. So former President Jacob Zuma's daughter has again dragged Transport Minister Fikile Mbalula. Now, this is from Times Live, so they obviously don't know how to speak English properly, but you can't say a sentence like has dragged. I know what you mean, and I know that's a term that people use now, but it isn't good English, and you have to use a proper sentence here, otherwise we don't know what you're talking about.
This is an article, right?
Right, this is an actual article by a journalist. So I'm going to shame the person who wrote this because they need to be embarrassed. Kyle Zeman, learn to write English, otherwise you shouldn't be a journalist. So former President Jacob Zuma's daughter, Duduzile, has again dragged Transport Minister Fikile Mbalula. What that means is, she has brought him up and made fun of him on social media and
criticized. Yeah.
Correct. Anyway, this time he publicly backed President Cyril Ramaphosa. In a video shared online, Mbalula can be heard throwing his weight behind Ramaphosa. Reacting, Zuma Sambutla, that's her surname, said Mbalula was singing for his supper. Fact, not even his peers who want to emerge are considering this guy on their slates. They must tell you about this guy. So Shem, he has no choice, she said. So there we go. She doesn't think much of Figuele. Her comments drew mixed reactions, with some agreeing and others telling her not to meddle in ANC matters. That's also silly. She's allowed to meddle in ANC matters just like everyone else is. What, like the ANC is so holy that only ANC people can meddle in ANC matters? Puh. Maybe if more non-ANC people meddled in the ANC, it'd be a better organization. Anyway, she threw shade at Mbalula in March this year after he claimed to have just landed in Ukraine. She shared pictures of herself in front of the Peterhof Palace in St. Petersburg, adding, "Someone please tell my good friend Mbux that I have just landed in Russia. He has still blocked me." The former president's daughter backed Minister Lindiwe Sisulu in a fiery debate about an ANC presidential hopeful for 2017. That was back in 2017. Mbalula weighed in, claiming former President Zuma is not a saint and he was a disaster for this country. So we basically got two idiots arguing about who should be the next president. So I don't even know why I read that story. I'm kind of embarrassed. So sorry. I shouldn't have done that. That's on me. That's on me. Sorry.
But I think it's more interesting when somebody who's more politically affiliated speaks out on these things. You know, to your topic, to your comments about, you know, why should she be allowed to comment on it? I mean, because she's Jacob Zuma's daughter, it's already more interesting. Let's be honest. I mean, who am I? Just little Lebang saying, oh no, Fikile Mbalula, I'm going to drag you today. Nobody gives a rat's ass. But because she's Jacob Zuma's daughter, it's going to make the news. People are going to care. People are going to be interested to hear what she has to say. As far as I'm concerned, I don't think she's ever really said anything of, you know, any sort of value that we can really take away and be like, aha, you know. So we'll continue to listen to this fluff that's being spewed at us, sadly.
Right. I love meddling in ANC matters, says Corona. Corona's boring. A great pastime of mine. Yeah, I mean, we should all be encouraged to do that, meddling in ANC matters. Imagine some idiot on Twitter tells you, meddling. Stop meddling. Like, excuse me, I'm allowed to meddle. That's the whole point. They're the biggest party in the country. And then shame, DSTV have put out a story about poor Game of Thrones ratings. Apparently, and this could also be, you know, I mean, they've spent more money promoting House of the Dragon, which is the follow-up to Game of Thrones. The home channel HBO that actually commissioned this show, they spent an absolute fortune. They spent more money on promoting this show than any other show in history. But the premiere of HBO's big Game of Thrones spinoff had a shockingly poor performance on DSTV in South Africa, raising questions about the value of international premium content on the service. Figures shared by the Broadcasting Research Council show only 7,701 viewers tuned in for the first episode. Now, Lebang, I don't have to say what I'm going to say now because I know you're going to think the same thing. But who watches TV on their schedule anymore, right?
Yeah, that's the first thing. I promise you, people probably definitely watch that show, just not on DSTV. Definitely not on DSTV. I highly doubt that. And also, since DSTV did that whole thing of like removing multiple devices, you can only watch it on like one device now.
Right. You're not
our first go-to
what is
anymore.
This?
Sorry,
what is this,
guys.
1985 with J.R. Ewing in Dallas that we need to set our watches and go, oh, everybody, Dallas is coming on at 7:30. We better be sitting in front of the TV. I mean, if you want to watch this
open
show.
Open time.
Exactly. You want to watch this show, you can watch it whenever you like, right?
You can watch it whenever you like, even wherever you like. The options these days are plenty. And again, DSTV, you are not our first option anymore.
No.
We've had a good run. You've monopolized for as many years, but it's over. Yeah. It's pretty much becoming over for you.
It's done.
Sorry.
Right.
Not sorry.
Sanele wants to throw this in, says, Fikile Mbalula is spineless. He looks out for no one but himself. He stands for nothing but his stomach. He sings praises for whoever is in power at the time. So basically, Sanele's...
More meddling.
No, but Sanele's agreeing with Duduzile. Cool. You're allowed to. All right. Let's get to JJ Cornish. This is one of our favorite things about Tuesdays, is we get to hear from the man about what's going on the continent of Africa. And, of course, there's always a lot going on. It's time to catch up with JJ Cornish in Africanalysis. Africanalysis is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, looking at what's happening around the continent. So, welcome, JJ. How are you?
Bonjour, I'm immensely well, thanks. Labang, the reception cut out a bit. You spoke about a bit of fluff that has nothing to say. Were you talking about Liz Truss or who exactly?
Isn't it weird?
Didn't pick up.
You know, let me ask you about this, JJ, because you've been a journalist for years and you've been watching international relations go up and down and left and right. Has anyone cared this little? Has there ever been a time in modern British history where the actual appointment of a prime minister was so uninteresting and unimportant that it barely made a blip on the news? No one cares.
I think Britain has got to the stage where their prime minister will appear in those group pictures at things, but their prime minister will appear sort of on the left-hand side of the back row.
Right.
You know, this is where Britain is going to. I'm very sad to see that happen, but I don't know what's that going to do for a country that's already, you know, quite sadly in decline. Ah, too bad.
Well, it is too bad. But, I mean, you know, we bring you on to talk about Africa, but we can't pretend that we're not part of an international community. And for years, people actually, they needed to know, like, what? How do the British feel about this? How do the French feel about this? How do the Americans feel about this? And if you think about those three countries, you got Joe Biden, who doesn't know whether he's a teapot or a hockey stick in America. They basically wheel him out, and then his wife kind of positions him facing the audience instead of with his back to them. Then he kind of looks like, you know, like those old age home guys who, you know, they're waiting for their pudding or whatever. And he stands there and he kind of looks and he goes, "Hi, everybody." And he whispers to them at the wrong time, and he sounds creepy at the wrong time. Then he shouts. He's angry. He's a very, very, very unhappy and disturbed man. This is America's president. Then we've got Liz Truss, who I don't think the average person in Britain could even pick out of a lineup. And Emmanuel Macron, who, I mean, yeah, I don't think he said anything useful for at least a few months. And certainly he and most of the European leaders are finding themselves between a rock and a hard place with this Russia-Ukraine situation and a very cold winter on the horizon.
Well, you know, I get the sense, though, that really the big players have left politics. You look at is Liz Truss the best that Britain can find? Did you see the statistics of the people that that elected her? 97% white, 71% male, 61% over 55. It was 0.04% of the electorate.
But maybe they're the only people who are actually disciplined enough to wake up and go and vote. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, people are so nonchalant and so non-participatory in democracy. You'd see this happening in America, too. I heard someone say the other day that if you want to avoid people at university shouting at you for opinions that they don't like, just make the lecture at 7:30 because most of them won't arrive on time for it. And then you can actually have your say and leave. And I wonder about young people in Britain. I don't think any of them give a damn about politics anymore. They feel it's such a distant thing. And maybe that's also true here. You know, we've got massive voter apathy in South Africa and even in Africa, despite the fact that so many people have only had the franchise for, you know, 20-something years.
Yeah, and having the franchise is one thing. And even exercising that every 5 years is another thing. But, you know, what do you do with the people you put there? So if you don't really care, then you've got to live with what is there. And if you don't make proper decisions about who to put there, you've got to live with those consequences too, as we see, you know, in what is happening here. I mean, our first story today, for example, involves the Kenyan elections.
Right.
The courts have had things to say about the last three of them. This time round, they have upheld the win by William Ruto, and rejected with some contempt the claims of cheating and fraud by Raila Odinga. Now we wait to see, you know, what is going to happen next. Raila Odinga five times has lost the presidency, fought and lost it. What are his supporters going to do? But interestingly, the Chief Justice, Martha Koome, is a woman Chief Justice in Kenya. She called him what Raila Odinga came with as double hearsay, no more than hot air or wild goose chase. And she's spoken about forgeries of the claims that he's made and reminded people that swearing falsehoods or swearing to falsehoods is a criminal offense. So this country, which is technically, economically, well, economically hard to say, but, you know, one of the leaders in Africa is still bouncing around on the top of a balloon. They don't know what's happening. It's very, very sad. But, you know, we spoke about England. Who'd want to take Liz Truss's job? Well, who'd want to take William Ruto's job, where they have they're drowning in billions of dollars of debt and the rising or soaring food costs and fuel prices? So, you know, maybe that's the thing. The cool guys and cool girls don't want to go into politics anymore. For good reason. You know, the other guys have ruined it so much. You go in there and you fix up a mess for half of your term in office. That's what happened to Barack Obama, for example.
Well, you know, a lot of these politicians are just being shown up also for the kind of really, really superficial sometimes quite vacuous people that they are. They're really just looking for a way to make money really quickly. And in Africa, we seem to have quite a lot of that going on. So what is going to happen in Kenya? I mean, all of this sounds extremely confusing. Do they have a government, or are we going to be fighting about the election results for another 3 months?
Well, they have a government. And if Raila Odinga smart now and steps back and says, okay, you know, I don't like it, but you've made this decision, because the previous decision, they overturned the election. Remember, 2017, they had to have it again. This time, that's not going to happen, which is very costly and paralyzing for a country. So our hope is that Kenya starts to, it's got an enormous job, William Ruto has, to pick the country up out of the mess it's in. And he must be left to do it. And, well, the other Africans have congratulated him. Let's give him some space to do it.
All right. Let's turn our attention to Morocco, because they've just announced a French-Algerian-Tunisian alliance, which is designed to prolong the Western Sahara conflict. We know about the people there, and we know how long they've been fighting for their independence. We also know that they're going to take on Nigeria, Angola, South Africa, and Mozambique, that also recognize that that they are an African Union founding member. Again, this all looks so amateurish, doesn't it? It seems to me that, you know, a country like the Western Sahara, which most countries in Africa seem to have accepted, doesn't suit their immediate neighbors. And we're now not sure whether or not these people actually are allowed to have a sovereign state. These are basic concepts. It's very Keystone Cops. It's very like Bozo the Clownish.
I call Morocco the new African bully. It took that role from its good mate, the apartheid regime.
Right.
And, you know, I spent most of my career covering the machinations of that regime. And the capacity they had to shoot themselves in the foot was quite astounding. You know, if they got a gun, they would shoot themselves in the foot with it, and no matter what they needed to do. And that, I mean, that's what brought them down at the end of the day. And Morocco is exactly like that. What happens is they have TICAD, the Tokyo International Conference on African Development, a very, very important development conference. It's given, promised $30 billion to Africa. It was hosted this time in Tunisia, and as a member of the African Union, Brahim Ghali, the Western Sahara president, is invited and received at the airport by Kais Saied, the Tunisian president. Well, Morocco goes spare. The thing is, Morocco is in illegal occupation of Western Sahara, and it suddenly said, we're not going to do any business with people who don't recognize that we actually have sovereignty over Western Sahara, which nobody recognizes, certainly not the International Court of Justice. And so they withdrew their ambassador in Tunisia, but it's a small country next to them. And Tunisia actually maintains that it hasn't taken sides on Western Sahara, but this was a Tokyo called conference, and they have to receive all the leaders. Then they start to bully Tunisia. They've got a boycott, sport boycott, an economic boycott. The fact is Morocco has fallen out with everyone, including France, which was its major backer. You know, last year, of course, the Moroccans were found to be bugging Emmanuel Macron's telephone. If we believe what you were saying about Emmanuel Macron, they wouldn't have got good information from it.
But asleep.
There they were, bugging his telephone.
Unreal.
And Morocco wouldn't dare in a month of Sundays take on Angola or take on Nigeria or take on South Africa, who've all received Brahim Ghali as a head of state. I think South Africa's going to do it again one of these days. They wouldn't dare do that, but they take on small Tunisia next to them. And now they're talking, the latest one, every day they're coming up with something new about an Algeria-France-Tunisia alliance to prolong the fighting in the Western Sahara or the conflict there. Well, there was a full-on war, and that ended when Morocco promised to hold a referendum of the Sahrawi people on who they want to govern them. And when it became that, well, it was absolutely clear even then that the Sahrawi would say, we want independence. Morocco went and said, hang on, wait. We weren't thinking. We'll start again. And they've been playing this game now for more than 40 years. So, they are the African bullies at this time. And Sadly, Spain has been bullied into recognizing their claims on Western Sahara. Donald Trump did it because he thought, as a part, they would support his moves on Israel. Well, that's made Morocco friends with Israel and given them access to Israeli technology that allowed them to do the bugging of Macron's telephone. So, but that is the mess up north, right on the fringe of Africa with the Mediterranean, which should be one of our most prosperous areas, using its communal muscle to get the best deals, trade deals with Europe, and we're not doing that.
So, JJ, kind of in reference to the conversation that Lebang and I were having before, why should we care about this? They're miles away. We're closer to China in terms of our relationship than we are to Morocco. Why should we care about what's happening in the far extreme corner of Africa post the, you have to travel across the Sahara to even get there. Why should we care here in South Africa?
Well, because it's part of our continent, and we Africans do care intensely about what's happening on our continent. And Morocco, as it happens, turns out to be the last remaining colonial power, having illegally occupied the Western Sahara in Africa. And that has to be changed. That has to be moved now. Mm. And so if we want this continent to work and we like the idea, we are a gateway to Africa. Countries trade with us or enhance relations with us in order to get to this potential market of Africa. Then we play a leadership role there. It's one of those things. We have that footprint. Whether we like it or not, we are leaders in Africa. So we can't say, what is the president doing in, Equatorial Guinea? He's there for a reason. And when we play a role in the African Union, we were a little bit modest at the beginning, but we're now playing a more muscular role in the African Union. It's very important because, as I say, we are leaders in Africa, whether we like it or not.
Well, okay. I mean, I just think that even the African Union is something most South Africans could care less about. If you put it on the ballot, if it was one of the things we voted on in this country, I wonder if you'd even get the kind of turnout that Liz Truss got to elect her as prime minister in this country. I don't think most people in South Africa even care about the African Union.
I think most people around the world don't really care about multilateral diplomacy, multilateral affairs, which happened to be one of my great passions. But the point is, and I'm saying something that, will make me look a little bit weak at the knees, but things like the African Union, things like the United Nations, and people love to slag off the United Nations, they are there for a reason. And I say it is better to have them than not to have them, because not to have them, allows for a kind of an absolute miasma. The thing is, the African Union is certainly better than the Organization of African Unity, but it's filled with faults, and we have to fix that too. But yes, in any election anywhere in the world, if you put up foreign policy and certainly multilateral policy, it's not a vote winner.
Just one last quick thing, JJ, because I don't want to leave this out. But Mali and Burkina Faso, obviously their coup leaders have met as their countries have paid an increasingly high price for the putsch's failure to quell the jihadi attacks in that part of the world. These are two other unstable countries with unstable governments and essentially military juntas, right? I mean, that's what's going on there.
Well, the military came in and with some support from the civilians, because the civilian governments could not contain the jihadis. That in Mali in last year and in Burkina Faso this year. And Lieutenant Colonel Damiba and Colonel Gweka from Burkina Faso and Mali respectively met in Bamako to talk about trying to make things work. Because right now the reasons for their coups are made nonsense by the figures. They had 35 Burkinabe killed at the weekend when the army were handing out supplies to in areas which were inaccessible because of jihadi attacks. Mm. There have been 60 Malians killed just in the last week by this Russian mercenary group, the Wagner group, that the Malians have brought in. So effectively, they came in, the military said, we've got to take over too, because the civilian governments just can't do the job. And the army, the two military juntas, are doing a worse job. There's a report out that hundreds of people, civilians, have been killed by the Wagner group. I don't know why the Malawians decided, the Malians decided to bring in this group, which fights in Syria, Ukraine, and has been operating in the CAR, Central African Republic, and Libya. But they are actually sort of uniformed criminals doing terrible things. So, you know, there's got to be another solution found for these two countries in the Sahel, which have been victims of jihadi violence, and the military option certainly hasn't been the one that has brought relief.
JJ, as always, thank you for your insights. It's very good for us to connect on these matters, and I love hearing your point of view on all of them because you, as I said earlier, have such a connection to people in those countries. You've been there in many cases yourself. You know a hell of a lot more than us, and we could get to live vicariously through you and understand a little bit better what's going on. It's great to see you, JJ, and thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Lovely being with you.
Thank you. That's JJ Cornish and African Analysis, which has been brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. We will see you in just a couple of minutes. Stick around. CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday. CliffCentral.com.